And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Thursday, November 16th, 2017. Struggle on the date. That's really a problem, isn't it? Welcome to the Hagmann Report. We got a great show lined up for you today. The first half hour, we're going to be going over some news, some analysis, information that's been out there. How does it all fit? We have to keep focused, I believe, keep focused on exposing the criminality. The deeds of darkness, the evildoers in the swamp denizens. Of course, for new folks just joining us, tuning in live, heard live weeknights 7 to 10 p.m. right here on the Global Star Radio Network, as well as BTR, Blog Talk Radio, the fine folks there. You can also find our archives at BTR. I would urge everyone to click the follow button there on BTR. Join in and follow us, as well as follow us on social networking, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, independent Twitter feeds, as well as the show, all of that. We have a Patreon account as well, our Patreon initiative as well. We thank everyone for supporting us, supporting this program that gives us the ability to bring you the best of the best of the best of guests. Somebody's talking in my ear.
No, Eric said that the rewards on Patreon will be released soon.
Okay.
And there's a few different tiers of donation levels. In each tier, you receive something from us, whether it is, free digital stuff from that to the top tier, which gets an extra hour.
The top tier is like, come out and clean your kitchen.
Yeah.
Right?
And the top tier is not that much money, but you get an extra broadcast from us every month. And we're still working out different...
We're trying to be
packages,
right, and it's this. We've got big plans, we really do, and I'm telling you right now, with the ever changing landscape, the geopolitical landscape, Wow, are you guys tired? Are you? Let me just ask you. I started my morning show this way. By the way, we have our independent shows as well to complement this is our flagship show, the Doug Hagmann Radio Show. That's from 9 to 10. Eastern time, and all you have to do is go to BTR, that's Blog Talk Radio, or Global Star Radio Network. You just go to Hagmann Report, and you can find it. And of course, 2 to 3, John and Joe do their show. And we cover different topics. I'm very news and politics centric, and, I guess Joe and John are as well. But anyway, so watch for that. And, a lot of people, I've heard from a lot of people who listen to my show, and I don't know, have you heard this? A lot of people that download the show, and many people listen to me on their way to work, especially on the East Coast, or I'm sorry, the West Coast, because of the time. But getting a lot of good response from that, and I've seen a lot of great response on yours and John's show. So anyway, let's get right into a couple of things. Judicial Watch, there's two different items here that I think are extremely important. There are new Hillary Clinton classified emails, which were discovered. This, of course, just announced today by Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch today, they released 109 pages of new Hillary Clinton emails. Now, this is during her period of time when she was Secretary of State. Now, don't forget, there are three issues. And by the way, if you're looking and wondering why this mic is here, I hit it, and Eric is still mad at me for that, and I am too, because I just kind of hit it. For those watching or those listening on Global Star BTR, I can't see what I'm doing, but I moved my hand quickly, and it, I don't know if you can see it right there. We've had reports of low volume on my end, to the point where people are emailing me saying, stop mumbling. And if you know me, I'm not mumbling. I grumble, but I don't mumble. But anyway, So that explains that. But no, the 109 pages of new Hillary Clinton emails from her tenure as Secretary of State were released today.
Heavily redacted.
Yeah, but listen to, well, why? Okay, why did they have to be? See, here's the reason why. Well, you know what? Let me finish my thought that I started out with. The three areas of concern, in my view anyway. You've got Uranium One. And Shepard Smith, despite what you have said, you are incorrect, factually incorrect, Mr. Smith, on so many issues that you brought up. I have a report, by the way, I'm preparing, and you've heard that story before, right? I haven't written a thing in like, you know, a year, it seems like, but no, that's not true. But I have a report, a very comprehensive report, an investigative report that I will be releasing on a number of issues, including the Uranium One. And as I explained in my program today, what this is, let me finish my thought, the three areas of concern. You've got the Uranium One scandal or criminal cabal. And by the way, I don't have the book. The book is in my office. But the Venona Secrets, if you read that book, I believe it's called Venona Secrets, there is a Canadian connection to the atomic espionage back in the late 40s, early 50s. And if you... I was reading the, and I think that's like chapter 10 or 11 in this book, and the book's 500 and some pages. But when you look at the, what's taking place with the uranium story, it mirrors the espionage that was done in the late 40s and early 50s. For which, by the way, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg got the chair. And you might think that's hyperbole, or there's a non-equivalence factor there. But I'm going to tell you something. There is an equivalence factor there. And as a matter of fact, it's even more stunning today with respect to the Clinton Foundation, especially on the personal enrichment side, than it was back during the Rosenberg's days. But there's a comparison to be made. I found that absolutely astonishing. So Uranium One and what happened there, that's number one. Number two, of course, is the Clinton email scandal. And that's what I'm referring to here. And then the third thing is the Russian collusion, which kind of envelops the Uranium One story. However, the Russian collusion is not Donald Trump, as we have said. It's Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the deep state or the shadow government. But it also encompasses Comey, Mueller, as well, Rosenstein, and a few others. But here's the issue with the Russian collusion. And if you take nothing else from my little monologue here, it's this. It is my sincere belief, based on everything I've researched and investigated, that what we are witnessing today was the Clinton camp or the DNC camp or both attempting to, in conjunction with the American intelligence services, insinuating into the campaign of Donald Trump, spies, if you will, or operatives in order to set up Donald Trump. That's going to come out. I truly believe via investigation that will come out. But think about that for a moment. All right, but just real quick, and then I'm going to toss it to you, Joe. The latest on Judicial Watch, 109 pages, heavily redacted, as you stated, during Hillary's tenure as Secretary of State. This goes beyond any type of carelessness. Mm-hmm. And remember, the verbiage was changed from gross negligence because that was too close to the law, the statute, the uniform statute. So they changed the wording so it didn't appear that Hillary Clinton had violated any of the U.S. criminal code. But what we're seeing now with respect to the emails, these emails, 109 pages, are part of the 72,000 pages of documents that the FBI recovered last year in its investigation in Clinton's use of a unsecure private server. If any one of us would have done this in that position, we'd be facing jail time. We had a guest on, a member of the armed services who was jailed, did hard time for far less and had no ill intent whatsoever.
The pictures.
Right. And you folks, you remember that story. But anyway, two heavily redacted emails, marked classified confidential, included a November 2011 exchange under the subject, Egyptian MFA on Hamas PLO talks. You talk about some very serious investigative papers. There's one right there. And also a June 28th, 2011 email from Clinton to Huma, in which Clinton writes, I have now promised the Kuwaiti Prime Minister three times that I will deliver an address at the Oxford Islamic Center. Please be sure that it's on the list for next fall / next year. And of course, this goes into Sid Blumenthal. You've got to understand the position, his position about with Hillary Clinton. And of course, Sid Blumenthal emailed Hillary Clinton about the situation in Libya on March 9th of 2011 with a subject line, H, serious trouble for living rebels, Sid.
I just read that email.
Yeah. It's, so all of this, when you look at the totality of criminality, how's that?
Yep.
This far surpasses anything that, in my view, that Robert Mueller could ever come up with. And so the bottom line here is you've got three working scandals, if that's the word, or three working issues, three working investigations. And that is what I am looking at very heavily. And, of course, this to me is untenable, in the fact that the Department of Justice appears to be slow walking it at this point. And I understand, I've said this in my morning show, I understand that a special counsel might not be necessary, but if the Department of Justice does its job. But at this point now, it's looking more and more like a special counsel should be assigned to encompass all three of these topics and subjects. So, Joe, you can go if.
I don't understand why these emails are so heavily redacted either, but they are. And there's, aside from what you pointed out about the Libyan rebels are in trouble, I have not seen really anything groundbreaking or really even newsworthy in here.
Oh, no. Emails. No, it's... Well, what I just referenced
the Libyan rebels in trouble, that's a very interesting.
No, I think the fact that they're redacted, obviously, is... Proof.
I mean, they're very heavily redacted,
right? Which would certainly suggest the nature of the information. So that's
Well, kind of switching gears here in this first half hour, I want to cover a few things that have come out today. One, we have the new sexual assault allegations against Senator Al Franken. And we also have some updates on the Judge Roy Moore story. And we covered this in our Hagmann Daily Show. Gloria Allred was on Wolf Blitzer yesterday, and she was asked a few questions, which she was very cagey and really didn't answer. One, she was asked if the signature on the yearbook that is the alleged accuser, Beverly Nielsen, if that signature was forged. She refused to answer that. She went on to say... You know, she would release the yearbook to a Senate Judiciary Committee. And then she was also asked if her client would take a lie detector test. Then she said, no, I believe swearing under oath, testifying under oath, is basically the same thing. Now, we've learned from Judge Roy Moore's attorney that...
Wait a second. Say that again.
Okay, in Hagmann Report, there's an article to a Newsbuster, a link to a Newsbuster's article.
Right.
Gloria Allred on Wolf Blitzer. And she was asked if the signature was forged that she presented in the yearbook of that Beverly Nielsen.
Right.
And she would not answer. She said, and she was also asked if she would turn the yearbook over for a handwriting sample to experts. And she said, no, she would only turn it over to a Senate Judiciary Committee.
Okay.
And then she was asked if her client would take a lie detector test, where she said, no, I believe testifying under oath is good enough. But Well, a few things.
Look, polygraphs, though.
Right, they're not a missing one.
Right, and contrary to what you see on television, a polygraph test, a polygraph examination is only as good as the individual who administers the examination.
What's important here is the Judge Roy Moore's lawyer came out in a press conference and said that that the accuser was lying. Not only did he see her since her alleged attack or whatever that was, he presided over her divorce. And in the signature line that's on the yearbook, the DA apparently is how his court documents are stamped, and then his assistant or secretary would write her initials when she would stamp his signature. Why do I bring all this up on this story that is just seemingly never going away?
And that's not going to have any winners at the end of the day, but go ahead.
Right. Because earlier in the week, I took a stance of, well, you know, this is up to the voters of Alabama. I really don't care. But the more I look at this, the more I really truly believe the only thing this is a political attack to try to tip the scales of the Senate to not have an overwhelming majority, which was what apparently Roy Moore would have given them if he was elected.
He'd be the 52nd or 52.
And I saw that today, and it really... I got back into this Roy Moore story, and from what I can tell, and this is just my opinion, I don't think if people thought he was creepy or people didn't like that he dated younger women, all this is just a political hit job, from what I can tell. And again, this is for the people of Alabama to make their minds about, but I do believe that this is much more political than anything else, and I don't believe that the accusations are true. I don't believe the woman that came out with Gloria Allred was telling the truth at all. But again, this is just my opinion. But when we look at the media's response,
Campbell, by the way, Pat Campbell did have just to interject one thing real quick. Pat Campbell from KFAQ had a body language expert on his program this morning, and he detected deception. Pat Campbell's Twitter feed. He did detect the deception in the body language. And here I am saying, you know, not dissing, but questioning polygraphs. I'm talking about body language. It's just something to consider. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's there's a few other things. I mean, she could have went in a courtroom and had him preside over her divorce case and not make an issue out of it. I don't see what is causing her to cry at this press conference the other day. And on top of that, she did something real weird. She brought a picture of a crayon drawing.
Yeah, well, I saw that picture.
It made no sense to me.
I just didn't have the time to really get into that. What was that all about?
This was something somebody drew of me, or I drew of myself when I was 16. That was the only... There was no reason or point to it. I have no idea. But to me, it just seemed completely disingenuous. And if she really is... If that really did happen the way she said it did, bringing Gloria Allred in that circus show they called the press conference the other day was probably the worst thing that can happen. But the reason I find this so important is because we have new claims against Al Franken, a senator of Minnesota. And not only new claims or allegations, there's a picture of him front and center on Drudge groping a woman who is sleeping. Now, the media has come out to downplay and even call this a mock groping. You have... an article here, victim shaming, MSNBC's Hunt, Franken's actions not actually groping. She goes on to, her name is Cassie Hunt, she goes on to make excuses for Franken saying, well, all he did was, try to kiss her when she didn't want to be kissed, and it was a mock groping. And we have CNN panel downplays Franken's claims, saying, well, he was just a comedian. He wasn't even in office at this time, and it was so long ago, I don't see how this is relevant today. Well, look at what they did with Donald Trump when they tried to bring the allegations against him because of some language he used, which was 8 years in the past when he was a private citizen. And look at how they are reacting to Judge Roy Moore. If we just take the Beverly Nielsen accusation out as completely non-credible, there is nothing in there where, you know, he's sexually assaulting anybody. It's just allegations of, you know, being, you know, potentially creepy. But here you have a picture of Al Franken actually groping a woman while she's sleeping, and the media is making excuses for him. Now they're going on to talk about it. Will he step down? And They say, no, he's not going to step down because the accuser didn't want him to step down or didn't call for it. And he has since come out and apologized. But it's a tale of double standards in the media when it comes to these sexual assault allegations. They protect their own, and they throw the other side of the aisle completely under the bus.
You know, my
it's
wife
not
and I, okay,
consistent.
But my wife and I were talking about this today, and I just wonder how low that bar is being set now. And this is, believe me, this
what,
is
for the sexual
right.
assault claims.
And I'm going to tell you right now,
yeah.
the act of any kind of sexual assault to me is reprehensible. It's beyond. There are no excuses for that. However, you know, it almost seems and. Please understand when I'm saying this. I'm not downplaying anything, but it almost seems as if a guy can get in trouble just by complimenting.
Well, that's
a
what
sincere
the latest
compliment,
allegations
of a woman
against Roy Moore is. She worked in the mall. This was a new accuser who came out today, and what did she accuse him of? Of making her feel creepy. Because he said some things to her a few times.
Well,
and that wasn't even overt nasty things.
Yeah,
from what
okay.
she said.
Well, what
asking
about Joe
about
Biden?
Relationship
that,
status?
I mean, if that's the bar, then Joe Biden should be put right in there. If you've watched any of the snippets of video from Biden, but see, here's the thing. Okay,
that's fake news, according to the New York Times.
Right,
by the way.
Right, fake news. Just so much footage of it, and it's interesting because I when we talk about this, or when we talk about Uranium One, or we talk about Sean Hannity, it's amazing the visceral reaction that I get in emails. And on Twitter, and it's just incredible. But I think this generation, in my view, we are seeing a generation of snowflakes. And again, understand this: I am not in any way someone. If a man engages in inappropriate sexual behavior against a woman, that
goes
intolerable.
Without saying,
right? So, but you have to disclaim this. But if you know. And I certainly, people laughed. Who was it that said they wouldn't have dinner with, was it Mike Pence or, saying that they wouldn't be in the same room alone with a woman or have dinner alone with
Mike
a woman?
Mike Pence never eats dinner alone
right.
with a woman.
And I've told my wife this. I would never, seriously, me, I would never be in, when we go to conferences, there, I would always have someone with me. I would never, first of all, I would never be in a hotel, room or that would just never happen. But I think the bar has been set pretty low, and I think a lot of people, I've got to say this. I think a lot of people have become snowflakey in their reaction to certain things. Complimenting a woman could be considered sexual harassment. And I'm not talking about, hey, you know, with a slap on the butt. No, I'm not talking like that. I'm talking about. Or holding a door open for a woman is sexist. Really? You know, or helping someone on with their coat could be proclaimed as sexist. But I think what we're seeing here is just this de-evolution of, what Greg Jackson sometimes talks about, or often talks about, is manners. And, I don't know. Is the line crossed? If you've got a hypersensitive individual, hypersensitive man or woman, it doesn't matter, who is offended by the actions or statements from another person that would ordinarily be sensible to or ordinarily appeal to or be okay with a reasonable and sensible person, is the person who's interpreting and saying, oh, that's creepy or that's offensive, is that person, is the man or woman guilty of engaging in inappropriate conduct? I don't think so. That's just me, and I think that we've really slid down a scale here over the years, and it's doing damage to the real victims of sexual assault. It's
doing
extreme damage to the credibility of the real victims out there.
That's where the media is not helping.
That's right.
With what they're doing in this day and age. And Roy Moore had a press conference today. He's not stepping down. He's going to continue his run for Senate, which will bring an interesting situation, especially if he wins. Well, only if he wins, as we see, you know, the media continuing to make excuses for Franken and put down Judge Roy Moore. But either way, it is a mess. And as you said, the way that the media is handling this is definitely hurting other women who come forward and could hurt their stories and their credibility just by the way the media covers it. Also, there's new allegations against Kevin Spacey today. Apparently, 20 more accusers came out. You have an accusation against Sylvester Stallone that...
Yeah, I saw that one, too.
Him and a bodyguard.
Wow.
Yeah, had inappropriate sexual relations with a 16-year-old. And yesterday, we had the guy on, Matthew Valentinus
from
the movie The Open Secret, detailing the exploitation and sexual abuse of children in Hollywood.
Which is a real problem.
Yeah, he's got... I mean, of all the things and names he talked about on our show yesterday... He's got 10 times more information than that on his video, and probably much more information that never made it into the film. So I think we're just the tip of the iceberg still with these claims that we're seeing.
I just, you know, the only thing is, and I pray, I really pray that all the truth will come out, and that's it. We need the truth. We don't need hyperbole. We don't need false accusations. We don't, and I've seen some really ridiculous accusations. And I'm gonna stop there. But we, you know what? The truth must prevail in these cases. And I pray that the truth comes out, because the bells that are being rung, you cannot unring them. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. Once it's out, it's out. And hey, even if it's not true, the reputation of that person or the you know.
And did you see there's, Congress has a special fund and paid out over $15 million to settle abuse, sexual misconduct allegations? We're going to have to talk about that.
Let's uncover those.
Yeah,
that's basically admission of guilt.
Yeah, it is. And $15 million of taxpayer money settled over 260 complaints.
Hey,
that's a lot of secrecy.
If our tax dollars paid for it, aren't we entitled to know?
Absolutely we are. We're going to be right back with John Finch, author of The Father Effect. When we return.
And welcome to this edition of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman, father-son investigative reporting team. I believe the premier program on the internet. Help us grow with us. And I say that in humbly and from the bottom of my heart, because I do believe that we are reaching people, reaching places, reaching and discussing topics that otherwise are not being talked about, or if they are, not in the context in which we discuss them. And for those who do support us, thank you. And even if it's just a note on a card, Joe and I we spent some time going over we do this just every day, pretty much. We go over emails, or I'm sorry, mail that we receive, as well as emails. And some just wonderful little notes, wonderful letters. And you know what? It's not about money. Money runs the operation, but it's about the larger goal here. And I think this is just my view, and I know Joe shares this view. You know, it's not enough to talk about these issues, but we have to be in a position or position ourselves to be able to make changes, positive changes. And I was, and I'm not talking out of school, I guess, because, I don't think Peter Schalka would mind me saying that Peter and I had a pretty lengthy conversation today on the telephone, and we both agreed if we weren't doing something, what would we be doing, and why? You know, we cannot afford to squander the time we have at our ages, especially my age. I'm old. I'm dust. You know, my son makes fun of me. He's like, "Hey, old man," you know. We need a walker. I'm kidding now, but, well, no, I'm not. He does make fun of me, and I do cry. I sob uncontrollably in the fetal position. But anyway, my safe space. I have to retreat to my safe space. Wait a second. Didn't that happen after the election? Safe spaces and chalk and what else? Dolls and balloons or stuffed animals? Or was it chalk that was a trigger? That's a trigger. Whatever. I don't know. But see, now, our next guest is John Finch, our guest coming up here. All of this, and here's why we asked him on. John Finch wrote a book. It's called The Father Effect. Here it is right here. See? It's the father effect. And here's the deal with this. The nuclear family has been destroyed. The idea of a father in the house, a mother in the same house. I'm talking about a biological father who is a male on the birth certificate, you know, that's got the plumbing and everything, and a biological female, again, the proper plumbing to go along with the pronoun and the sex, the gender. So you've got the nuclear family. And if you look at least in my view, if you look at what's going on today, I think if everyone was honest, I think you would agree that the destruction of the nuclear family, which was a tenet, a plank of the communist agenda, written into the congressional record, read into the congressional record back in 1963, to destroy the nuclear family, to go after the morality, to go after the normalcy of marriage, to take that away, I think we've seen that contributing to issues like the sex scandals, issues like the pedophilia. And I happen to see a picture today, and this doesn't really have anything to do with this guest, but I happen to see a picture today. This is from the Depression and many history books. And I really had to do a double take, and then I had to research to make sure that picture was correct. And yes, it is correct. It was a picture of a woman on standing on her porch, and there are four young children. I don't know how many people have seen this picture. Four young children seated on the step of the porch, and this woman is on the porch itself, hiding her face. And next to the four children is a sign that said, "Children for sale." The reason I bring this up, it really has nothing to do with this, is the desperation at that time to survive. That, to me, is symptomatic of the agenda of the socialists, of the communists, of the progressive liberal mindset, to push people there, if not by bankruptcy, then by the direct assault on our morals and the direct assault against the nuclear family, against what God, the God of the Holy Bible, not the God of the Quran, not the God of the Holy Bible, what God Almighty had ordained as a nuclear family. Again, I'm not a preacher, minister, pastor. I'm a marginal Christian at best. So this is my view. But I think that what we're seeing today with the pedophilia, with the, which is real. You heard, as Joe said yesterday, an open secret. With the allegations of all of this perverted sexual activity, if we're not seeing professional victims, we're seeing professional perverts. Seriously. We got them in Congress. They're filled. Joe, how many did you say?
In Congress?
Yeah.
There was, over the last 20 years, $15 million paid out on over 260 complaints of sexual misconduct.
Okay. All right. So, is that, that's a problem. But I also think that extends to, or it stems from, the assault on our morality. Hugh Hefner. Many people celebrate Hefner. And the Playboy. I think what Hugh Hefner did to women is just, that's akin to war crimes against women. Seriously. He didn't, I mean, he objectified women. He used women. He's no hero to anyone, or shouldn't be, in my view. And you know that punk Larry Flint. I'm going off again. But this is, to me, this is what the homosexual lobby is. What they want. If you read, after the ball, it spells out the agenda, and that's to make what is heinous and abnormal and perverted to make it right, to make it normal. You, people in drag, guys in drag. What's up with that? All of this combined. But see, where do we, where's this coming from? It's the removal of God. It's the removal of the Ten Commandments. It's the not talking about God. It's not by accident. It's by plan. But it also deals with the nuclear family, that the biblical family of one husband, one wife, and children. And respect in the home and prayer, praying together. And I did something the other, yesterday. That Ted Brewer does. There was a couple that actually sat down. I went out to, took my father-in-law who was suffering severely from Alzheimer's. It, really bad. And I took my wife and father-in-law out to breakfast. And, the couple seated to my right sat down and they prayed over their meal. And I went up to them and I paid for their lunch. It was $10. I mean, it was nothing. But I'm so thankful to see that. To me, that's rare. But again, that speaks to what our next guest, in part, what our next guest will be talking about, John Finch. If we can get back to that morality, that spirituality, that nuclear family, and the hope and healing that can take place, then I think we stand a chance. Otherwise, we don't. Joe, I'm going to toss it to you. I know we kept our guest waiting.
Yeah, we have our guest with us. He is the author of The Father Effect. Also, there is a DVD titled The Father Effect, and this is a very interesting piece. And John has he booked this guest a while back, and was real excited about this. Our guest is Mr. John Finch. John, welcome to the Hagman Report.
Thanks for having me. Greatly appreciate the time.
Well, it's good to have you. The Father Effect, as we introduce, this is your book, DVD. Let's talk about it, John. What propelled you to write this book? What's the book about? Tell our audience what the book's about.
Sure. The book is about my story of growing up without a dad and what that looked like for me, kind of just walking through this world lost, not knowing what a real man looked like, not knowing what a godly man looked like. And because I didn't have that dad walking alongside me, I bought into everything that the world says you need to be as a man. It's all about power, money, success, sex, all of those things that the world tells you the definition of a real man is. And so it's really a story of my growing up without a dad, and then a message of healing and forgiveness, and how God radically changed my life as a result of me finding forgiveness from my father. And I share stories throughout the film and the book that are intertwined with my stories. We interviewed John Eldridge, the best-selling author of Wild at Heart, Dr. Meg Meeker, and just several ordinary people with just extraordinary stories. And all of them had a compelling story to tell about their fathers and about the impact that their dads had on.
Okay. And you have your own personal experience. You grew up boys,
yep.
And your father committed suicide at age 11. How did that...
when you were 11.
Yeah. How did that affect your life?
You know, it impacted my life more than I ever imagined, because I suffered... Because my dad chose to take his own life, I suffered from abandonment. Mm. And there's various ways that plays out in all types of people's lives, whether it be abandonment from divorce or death or even disinterest. Just a dad that's not engaged and involved there in the home. And so, you know, for 30 years, I just really was angry And they're, you know, I was like a lot of men out there nowadays. I was just an angry, bitter, resentful guy. And because of that, I became a social alcoholic, and I was trying to use alcohol to cover up this father wound that I had because of the abandonment. And it really just led to a life of destruction, and started to impact my family, my friendships, you know, everything I was doing. And it was impacting my life in every way that I never imagined it would, and didn't even know that I had this wound at the time, and that I had an issue like I did.
Mm. Wow.
And a lot of people, in today's society, whether it's, the father, you know, abandoning the family, or, the children never knowing who the father was, or a number of different reasons, it seems that we have in this society, seeing now more than ever people growing up in fatherless homes. And this is not, you know, just one person's story. I would say that this is, you know, you're talking to probably 30% of the country.
Well, I'm more than that,
yeah,
I think.
At least.
John, if I can just kind of sneak in here, and this is not scripted, of course, but I don't know whether you heard what I was saying about the nuclear family, the biblical family, you know, one man, one wife, and their children. Obviously, to me, what we're seeing today with the perversity, with the, you know, the groping allegations, whether it's from being a whether they're professional victims, you know, hypersensitive, and boy, I have to, every time I say that, I've got to just, you know, file a disclaimer. I'm not saying that that's the case here, but it seems like there's something broken here on all sides. Isn't kind of this, I mean, your book really, I mean, that's what this is about. Right? I mean,
it is. It's about the epidemic. And the epidemic of fatherlessness and absent fathers is so much bigger than most anyone realizes and understands. You know, what inspired me to write the book and to do the movie initially was, as I began to share my story with others, everyone that I talked to had a story of their own. And there's statistics that we show and talk about in the movie and the book that say 9 out of 10 people have a father wound. You know, because we as fathers are not perfect. We're going to wound our kids. I wounded my kid. You know, I do the best I can not to. I think I make less mistakes now today than I did, you know, before this transition, if you will. But, you know, because we're not perfect, we're wounding our kids in some way. And so it's about trying to walk in that daily awareness of your impact as a father. And I think in today's society, especially, you have all the distractions of work and success and all of these things that are even more complicated than they were just 5-10 years ago. So you have a lot of men that are doing all these other things rather than choosing to spend time and be engaged and involve fathers in their life. And so I think that plays out in so many different ways nowadays. If you look at our social issues, whether it be prison inmates, whether it be teenage pregnancy, whether it be gang affiliation, all of those things are a result of an absent father or fatherlessness, a dad that's not there in the home showing that kid what it looks like to be a godly man.
Okay. And, John, I want to ask you this. You have the book and you have the movie. What is the difference between the two?
The book, I'm able to go into a lot greater detail of my story. There's kind of a backstory, if you will, that I talk about a little in the movie, but as I was growing up, my dad really got involved and with some interesting people and got busted for counterfeiting. And we actually ended up going into witness protection and lived in Fort Knox for about a year. And so there's a lot of backstory that I'm able to talk about and tell that I wasn't able to tell at length in the movie.
What was
and,
that
and
like?
And we give a lot of...
if you don't, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I can't let
Did you
that
see
pass.
The goals?
Yeah. Okay, so you were,
well,
you were your family was in witness protection.
We were. I was actually only about 2 years old. And my dad had gotten wrapped up with organized crime, and my dad, you know, he was dropped off on the streets of New Orleans when he was 16 years old. His mom had had five or six husbands, and he, you know, he had a really rough life. And so she just dropped him off at 16 in New Orleans and said, hey, have a good life. And so he was a man of the streets, if you will. And he would get up every morning before school to get scrap metal to go, you know, exchange it for lunch money. I mean, it was one of those very, very, difficult life situations. And so as a result of that, he really never came out of that. He was always kind of the wheeler and dealer, the fast Eddie, if you will. And so it just led him into some of these other things as an adult. And it's funny because it was only about 8 years ago that as I began to talk to my mom more and more and ask her questions that I found all this out. So it was quite a shock to me. Matter of fact, I said, okay, is our last name Finch, really? or is there another name? So it was, I don't remember a lot about it. But I have heard a lot of stories, and I know a lot more about it now than I used to.
That's very interesting story. And I'd be asking the same question too, is my last name really Finch? And that's you know, not many people, have that kind of background as you do. I want to ask you about one of the chapters in your book. What is a father wound?
So a father wound plays itself out in a number of different ways. What it is it's something that or something that a dad did or did not do. So for example, let's take the first one. Maybe a dad never said, I love you, never said, I'm proud of you, never said, I believe in you. You know, those things as a young man and as a young woman, we need those affirmations growing up. If we don't have them, we're going to go look for them somewhere. And with men, it typically plays out, again, like it did with me, with success or money or women or however that might look. And then with girls, it plays out so many times with getting into abusive relationships or being very promiscuous. You know, there's some ladies that we interviewed for the film, and it was amazing the number of those that were promiscuous because, you know, if they're not getting that father love, they're going to go look for it somewhere. And in most cases, it's probably not going to be the best place for them to be looking for it. From something that they did or did not do, maybe it was a physically or emotionally absent dad. Maybe it was something that he always said. You know, a lot of us have heard the term, you're never going to amount to anything. You know, those type of things, speaking that type of curse upon a child has lifelong impact. And so it plays itself out in so many different ways. And most people, when I say absent father, think of physically, but probably one of the most tragic ones is the absent father that's emotionally absent, that lives right there in the home, but chooses to do other things rather than spend time with his kids.
Yeah. And I wanted to get into that a little bit, the difference between abandonment versus, I guess you call it negligence, because many people who do have fathers probably experience to some degree what you talked about, whether it's because, you know, the dad is working all the time or has these, you know, different social habits, but there you can still develop, from your research, can you still develop these same father issues from a father who's not there versus one who is just emotionally negligent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was recently asked the question, you know, what's worse? What's the more difficult to deal with? The dad that's gone, like in my case, who's passed and is dead. You know, I have closure and I've found forgiveness for him. The dad that's still there and that you've experienced a father wound or are still struggling with that's a harsher reality and a more difficult path because it's a daily reminder of the wound. And so that's something that I see in so many individuals, both men and women, and it's very, very tragic in our society today.
I agree. Hey, and I just want to say, for people just tuning in, The Father Effect, John Finch is the author, and as far as I'm concerned, after reading this book, which it's an easy read. It's a good read. It's a rapid it's a good read. I'll just leave it at that. But
did you watch the DVD?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But as a father and a son, it talked to me both from the position of as a son first, and then as a father, and it was not only informative but instructive. So I just kind of want to paint that picture. And you also, Mr. Finch, I think succeeded into addressing many of the societal issues related to what Joe asked about what the father wound is. And I think that today, everything we're seeing today on the social level, whether, and this is my view from some of the most perverse stuff ever that, you know, we've seen in forever to some of the most criminal behavior is because of the, can kind of go back to this book, in my view. Or not the book, but the case you make.
Sure, and I appreciate those kind words. I'll tell you, the issues that we're having, and it's funny because I see men now, and it's very easy for me to recognize the wound in them because I see myself in them the way I used to be. And so it's, you know, this world's only becoming more and more, destructive in the way that the place that it's headed because of the acceptance and tolerance and all of these things that our kids are being taught. You know, instead of standing up for the truth and what you firmly believe in, you know, everybody's like, well, as long as it doesn't bother me, it's okay. They can do whatever. And so I try to teach my kids the best I can. And I'm not perfect. I mess up every day. But I try to teach my kids, you know, you've got to be willing to stand up for what you believe in your faith when everybody else is sitting down. Because we as a Christian society, as a group of believers, are the minority. You know, the accepted behavior now is all this craziness of transgenderism and same-sex marriage and all of those things. And so, you know, I look back and catch myself thinking, okay, am I just the old man that when I grew up would say these crazy things about, well, you can't listen to rock music because that's Satan, you know, those type of things?
Yeah.
Or is this reality? Because it seems like we're headed in such a bad place, and you know, we're trying to change that for the men that are willing to step up and come alongside us in the journey.
Well, that's fantastic. Our guest is John Finch. He is the author of the book The Father Effect, as well as the DVD. And John, where can people go to find the DVD and the book?
So the DVD and the book, thefathereffect.com, the DVD is available there. The book is available wherever books are sold, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, just wherever books are sold. We were very, very fortunate to have a publisher in Faith Words, and they have distributed pretty much everywhere.
Awesome. When we come back, we will be joined, continuing to be joined by John Finch. We're going to get into a little bit about depression and forgiveness, and what are things, practical advice for men to be better dads, as well as what people who have issues, whether it's abandonment or negligent issues with their parents and their father, what they can do to lead better lives. We'll be right back with John Finch after this short break. Don't go anywhere.